And being as this is Wednesday, it's at Wednesday after the 11 o'clock news. It's Left, Right, and Center with Bob Metz and Jeff Schlemmer. Welcome, guys.
Morning. Hello.
Jeff, you don't look, no offense, but you don't look quite as spiffy as you did last week. Last week, he's suit and tie, the full legal regalia here.
Sorry.
You look more relaxed.
For the paying customers.
More relaxed. Okay, all right. This morning, the guys have thought they want to take a look at the issue of monopolies, I guess, in a sense, and antitrust actions, kind of predicated on the actions that the American government is taking against Microsoft. I'm not sure that they're nose-to-nose on this one, but certainly this is a very important issue and one that I think needs to be discussed, and I'm glad that's what they want to do today. If you're not up on the story, the American government effectively has attacked Microsoft on the grounds that it's too big and it's a monopoly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are a number of explanations that say, no, that's not what it's all about. The U.S. government has said that's not exactly why we're doing this. We're not as upset about the fact that they may have a monopoly now as that it's going to lead them to more monopolies in the future, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The bottom line is government is stepping in and saying, your company is too successful, and we're going to put a stop to that. Is that essentially what's happening, Bob?
I'm surprised you even framed it that way. I agree entirely. That's exactly what they've said. And, you know, it's like there's an article in the paper today even talking about the Canadian rep for Microsoft saying that what they're trying to do, it's like asking Coca-Cola to include three cans of Pepsi with every case of Coke. And that literally is what they're almost being asked to do. You know, antitrust legislation is a no-win situation. It's been with us for years, and I've just never seen any effectiveness from it. It's like if you undercut your prices, you're undercutting the competition, and they come after you. If you charge the same as your customer, well, then you're colluding with your competition, and they come after you. If you charge too much, then you're price gouging, and then they come after you. So it's an attempt at price control and of control at the of the industry itself. But the irony of all of this is that the bigger Bill Gates gets and the bigger Microsoft gets, the cheaper programs and the accessibility to the internet and things get for the average individual. So the success is ours. We made that success. We are the individuals who are buying this product or not buying it, and that's what comes out of the wash, is that he's the winner in the game. And it's a sad situation that there are so many people that think that because of that his industry should be controlled.
Jeff, from your perspective, a little further to the left, is there a danger in someone like Bill Gates being as successful as he is?
Well, yeah, there seems to be. And it's interesting when I think back to my competition law class in law school, and we talked about the American history of, they call it competition law, that is, where they've broken up big companies because they say they're too big and too powerful. And the rationale at that time always was that, yeah, they'll cut prices until they get rid of their competitor, and then they will charge whatever they feel like because they have a monopoly in the market. It's interesting with Microsoft, sort of following them over the years, that Microsoft, of course, this can all be laid back to the fact that Bill Gates' dad is a lawyer, I think, and he's been involved in litigation since day one with that company. Mm-hmm. And most of the, particularly the early work that he did, was a matter of astute purchases, you know, buying the disk operating system, for instance. But there was a huge lawsuit involving Apple Computer, you may recall, mm-hmm. back 10 years ago when Gates designed the Apple user interface and then turned around and marketed basically a clone of it as Windows. And Apple said, you know, we bought and paid for you designing our interface, and now you're turning around and selling it yourself. That went on for years. There have been all kinds of other lawsuits over the years. Recall within the last two or three years, he had tried to buy a company called Intuit, which made...
But how were they settled? Were they in his favor, or were they...
There's never a clear decision in these things because they always negotiate. But in fact, what's happened with Microsoft recently is, of course, that they're negotiating way like crazy. And when the negotiations start flagging, that's when they lay all these charges and all this stuff. And I bet you that this will get negotiated again as well. Nobody's going to shut down Microsoft or anything. Although, on the other hand, the States has had a very strong tradition of coming in aggressively and busting. And I remember the main thesis coming out of my competition law class was, we have similar laws in Canada to theoretically prevent monopolies and so on, but we never use them. Whereas in the States, they've been very aggressive about it. You go back to Teddy Roosevelt around the turn of the mm-hmm. century, the big trust busters,
yeah.
You know, breaking up the railways. And I think, you know, in those days, the railways in some ways were similar to what computers are now. They were the revolutionary new technology that was taking over the United States and the world. And the government came in and said, we're not going to let a few guys with a couple of railways run the whole show. We're going to break it all up. Theoretically, to promote competition. And in a way, I don't think that's a left-wing idea. I think that the idea is that the people who are purchasing services from these guys are not confident that if they let one or two guys run this show, that they will get aggressive pricing. that they have to have a whole bunch of them.
I have to agree with you there. I think that a large part of the antitrust legislation mentality does come from the right, and it's one aspect of the right that I'm afraid I just don't agree with.
Cool.
So
we'll take a short pause on that note and return to take your calls at 643-1290. Left, right, and center with Jeff Schlemmer and Bob Metz. We're talking this morning about trusts and antitrusts and breaking up businesses because they're too successful. And as always, we invite your calls and comments. And Fernando joins us. Good morning, Nando.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Anybody for Monopoly this morning?
Yeah. Why is it that only one company makes Monopoly? Why is that? Anybody ever think about that?
No.
Anyway, go ahead.
I have to say that what the U.S. government is doing right now is kind of right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, Bob Metz is going to be mad at me about that.
Why do you feel
traditionally
that way?
I'm a right kind of person, but mm-hmm. you know, I've done programming like since early when the PC came out, and Microsoft always made it difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Computer programs and operating systems are so complicated that if you're not given the information on how to interface with it, mm-hmm. you'll never find out.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost impossible. Mm-hmm. It was easy at the very beginning when DOS, you know, 2 or 3 was small, but now it's really complicated. You know, and it's not the same as a car manufacturer and a third-party company wants to make starters.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could pull the starter out, copy it, make one that works, but you can't do that with software because it's intangible. It's absolutely intangible. Microsoft is a company that was only lucky. They were in the right place at the right time. Their software is mediocre. It really is.
Well, that's the complaint that I've heard from people in the computer industry.
I mean,
they're just not thrilled with it.
I run Win 3.1 because I don't like 95. I would never trust 98.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Bob, you know, I'm very sorry you said, you know, about the internet and all that kind of stuff.
Nando, it's funny what I hear you saying here so far. I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I'm still running Windows 3.1. I don't like Windows 95. I found it to be a very invasive program. But the fact is, a lot of people disagree with you and I. And they are the ones who made the decision to make this their standard. You know, I was just as angry when VHS became the standard.
Right.
My whole collection was beta, and I'm still convinced today that
beta is
a superior format.
Yeah. I still have a
beta. But the market wanted quantity, not quality,
right.
in the respect of video, because they wanted six-hour tapes instead of a three-and-a-half-hour tape.
And a lot of people don't realize that the Internet is not based on, I mean, now with a lot of the people having Win 95 and Explorer, but the Internet is Unix, and Microsoft has nothing to do with Unix.
Yeah, they've been fairly new to the whole
That's
Internet.
That's right. It's based on Unix machines. It's based on, like, Linux, freeware, all these other machines. Nothing to do with Microsoft. You know, Microsoft machines, if they were, like, the hub of major servers, would crash.
Nando, what do you think will happen with the positive? You say you sort of agree with them. What positives do you want to see happen out of this?
Well, you know, I predicted, like, 6 years ago that Microsoft would not last more than 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're down to less than 10 years where Microsoft will be split up. There's going to be like an OS division, operating system division, you know, maybe an application division, maybe a web division, but they'll be separate. And because it's intangible, there will be other players that can compete.
I'm a little lost when you say a program is and software is intangible. It looks pretty tangible to me. When I buy one, it's on a disk.
Yeah, but
there
you know,
are so many bytes. It's written in a certain order. It's as tangible as a text in a book.
Yeah,
if you
but if
say.
I want to start a company and I want to start writing software, let's say I want to make something that competes with Word 6 or Word 7 or whatever is out now,
mm-hmm.
it's very difficult. Very difficult.
Difficult from what, a programmer's point of view or from a marketing point of view?
No, from a programmer's point of view.
So your complaint against Microsoft is that to write programs compatible with Microsoft programs is a difficult thing.
That's right.
And that, to you, justifies the government stepping in and telling, what, Microsoft to make their programs simpler so that you can fit in with them?
Not to make it simpler. It's that they do have an absolute stranglehold on if you want to be a third-party developer to write software to get it out in the market. Like, I've got books here that talk about, like, DOS 5 and DOS 6,
mm-hmm.
and half the things are in there are only found out because of hackers going into the operating system and finding out.
Sure.
Otherwise, Microsoft would never have let it known to anybody.
Mm. And one of the suggestions, I guess, is that they have to make their Windows 98 more compatible with Netscape, which I gather is the dominant internet format right now,
right.
Which they don't want to do. They want to say, since whatever 95% of the world's computers use our operating system, we want to make it only easy to use our internet software, which we've now decided to get in the business of as well.
And what do you think is going to happen?
I think that Bill Gates is going to eventually lose.
Yep. Well, if that's true, then why are we worried about that right now? Why should the government be quote, trust-busting? Why not just let his company, as I believe all large companies do, they do go to a stage where they grow to a certain size and then
right.
they break up into their various divisions for the simple reason that it's not possible for one central authority to maintain the responsibility and quality control.
Right, but
we saw that with IBM.
You know? Sure. And it's going to happen to Microsoft, too, and I'm sure
right.
Bill Gates knows it.
And
I don't think it's a big secret to anybody.
That's right.
How does that justify us as the collective mob getting together and going after Bill Gates to make this happen faster? Do we benefit from that process? I don't think
no,
we do.
No, but you know what? Maybe that is part of the process that's going to happen anyway.
Well, see, as a programmer, Nando, I would have thought you'd be more interested in protecting your right to the programs that you write.
Oh, I do. And that's,
well,
that's
you're not
copyright.
Saying the same thing about Bill Gates, though. You're saying you have your copyright until you become so successful that everybody can just take it. Is that your argument?
No. My argument is that for my program to be used, if I try to sell it to millions and billions of users, I have to make it work on his operating system.
Right, and that's not his fault. That's the problem is you're trying to appeal to users who've already bought his Windows system. So if you're going to sell me something that I can use, sure, you're going to have to sell me something that is based on the system I use. That only makes sense.
That's correct, but there's no way for me to get in if he doesn't allow it.
All right, Nando, appreciate your thoughts today.
Keep having fun, guys.
Good to hear from you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And Ivan's been waiting. Hi, Ivan.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Yeah, good topic.
Good.
Yeah, and I'd like to give an analogy.
Sure.
I was the Tin Man for many years.
Mm-hmm.
In 1975, I opened up my own business. Did very well.
Yeah.
Then I opened up another company. Now, let's say that I purchased a manufacturing company that manufacturing vinyl siding.
Right.
And because I was really a smart businessman, I was able to manufacture a better product, at less cost, and I put all of the other companies out of business.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a monopoly. That's because I'm a better businessman.
Mm-hmm.
Same as Bill Gates. He's not lucky. Whoever said he was lucky? The man's a genius. You don't become lucky. You don't make $48 billion because you're lucky, Jim. You know? And I'll tell you something. This is very dangerous. If they can do that to someone that big, imagine what governments can do with little guys like me and you, Jim.
Well, I think the reality is, Ivan, they've always been able to do pretty much what they wanted with the little guys. They just haven't bothered very often.
But all I'm just saying is, as Bob said, we all benefit from Bill Gates.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I like I heard this on television. It's like saying to Coca-Cola, every time you sell your Coca-Cola, you must put three cans of
Pepsi in
it.
In there,
The man is a good businessman. Let him go. We'll all benefit. I'm a person that believes in freedom, you know, and he is smart. He's doing a good job. They're just jealous of him.
Yeah.
That's all. The United States government is afraid he's going to take over the United States, actually.
Thanks for the call, Adam.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. And Jim's up. Hi, Jim.
I think all you intelligent people there are missing the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
We need tougher gun laws. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
And if you're all smart, you'll all clue in. And I think some of you are smart there. Because every time somebody goes to buy the product, I'm sick and tired of people putting guns through the head, forcing them to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My biggest fear is that Bill Gates will lose his patience and just say, to heck with this, and just buy the United States. Gotta go, guys. I'm sure you can understand my point behind the gun, eh?
Yeah, thanks, Jim.
It's free enterprise.
Absolutely. Thank you. Bye-bye. 643-1290. Lauren's up. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good. It's a very interesting topic. I've been a computer person for quite a few years since the very beginning, and some of the points that were made earlier are true. I think that In actuality, it's probably the operating system is a substandard product compared to others that were on the market originally.
Mm-hmm.
However, the market chose Microsoft as an operating system. And I think that's where part of the problem is that they have inside knowledge and of the operating system that they don't share with third-party vendors such as Netscape or Corel WordPerfect,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera,
mm-hmm,
which gives their products an advantage that has enabled them to capture so much of the marketplace. I think that's part of the issue.
But let's say for an example, though, and I'm stretching it a little wee bit here, but let's say for an example that that Chrysler Corporation and Mercedes-Benz are now together and they put their engineers together and they come up with an engine that gets 200 miles per gallon. And they put this in and still has lots of power, and they put this engine in all their Chrysler and Mercedes-Benz cars, and my gosh, people around the world flock to buy those cars. They won't even look. Why would you look at a car that gets 20 miles to the gallon? My car gets 200 miles to the gallon, and General Motors and Ford and everybody else is just going into the toilet, and Chrysler is just becoming a behemoth in the marketplace. Should they have to share that technology?
Probably they would have to share that technology for the reasons that were just happening with Microsoft. The thing is that the computer industry changes so quickly. As they say, like every 3 month period is considered a year in the business cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that the legislation can move quick enough to even want to try to produce something that's viable, you know, to curb Microsoft. I think the idea is that they are the dominant player in the operating system, which is the desktop computer.
Mm-hmm.
But the world is moving into cyberspace, whatever that is, wherever that is,
mm-hmm,
and they're afraid that they're going to have that same dominance in cyberspace, and they're looking at trying to at least try to level the playing field so everyone can jump in and see who can control that. And then I think maybe that's just the whole gist of it, that the personalizing of it, of making Bill Gates the devil incarnate, and
mm-hmm,
that's all just jealousy, I think. I mean, more power to the guy to make $50 billion, $100 billion, a gazillion dollars. It doesn't matter. After a while, the numbers are meaningless anyway. And he claims he's going to give it all away before he dies anyway, which is great. But I still think that the problem is that they have such a control of your desktop right now that that other players can't compete fairly. And what they can't produce, they buy.
Yeah.
They tried to buy into it,
mm-hmm,
and they were told they couldn't because their MoneyWorks product was not quite up to the same standards as Quicken, and they tried to buy them, but we're told, no, I'm sorry, you can't even, you already own 85% of the marketplace in office suites in the operating system, et cetera. We can't let you own 95% of the money market as well.
All right, appreciate your call.
No problem.
Thanks very much. Bye bye. Bob Metch and Jeff Schlemmer here. Jeff, I want to turn to you a little bit on this because I know one of the concerns you expressed was the overweening size of this, and you drew our attention to the fact that other trusts have been broken up or large businesses have been broken up in the past, specifically in the United States, primarily the oil trust, steel trust, and the railroad trusts. If we exempt those three, and we may not have to, but just for the sake of argument, if you look at the industrial history of the Western world, we don't see these monopolies, at least as far as we can judge, we don't see them becoming negative. We don't see them becoming a drag on the economy, though. We don't see General Motors as a drag on the economy. We see it as one of the major engines of the economy. Same thing for General Electric. We didn't see that. Now, of course, they're also mixed up. You can't tell who owns who. But even then, even though we have these huge mega corporations, there still seems to be little evidence, and perhaps you can enlighten me here, but from what I read, little evidence that we are suffering economically because of the success of these corporations. In fact, the evidence seems to suggest just the opposite, that the more successful General Motors becomes, the more successful the society becomes.
Well, I don't know. And again, I think that companies have to be very careful themselves in the sense that goes back to my tax professor's line about pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. I think that when you to be big in and of itself is something that that doesn't necessarily bother people. We're probably going to have two mega banks in Canada, you know, by the end of the year, and nobody's really getting that wound up about it. But on the other hand, you look at things like some of the things that they talked about around monopolistic practices were things like price fixing, for instance, OPEC. You look at OPEC in the early 70s, for instance, it just had a devastating effect on the North America, the world economy, really.
But OPEC wasn't a business. OPEC was government.
No, but OPEC were a bunch of guys who had a bunch of oil who said, we're going to sell you the oil at a much higher price than they needed to.
Who were the head of countries that had a lot of oil.
And I think though, Jeff, if I could just take your example a little bit further, what happened to OPEC? They went in the toilet because they could not, their prices could not be sustained. There was a worldwide recession, which reduced the value of their investments and the money they were making, and they backed off and have not made that mistake
because,
again.
But for me, you look at practices. You don't look at the fact that they're big or little, but you look at, for instance, in the United States, they broke up AT&T, what, about 10 years ago now? And deregulated the phone industry, and came in with all these discount long distance services, and that did bring prices down, you know, for better or worse. And again, it's not the left that are saying that's
a bad government monopoly. That's what was broken down. They got rid of all the legislation that gave them that exclusive monopoly. It wasn't a natural monopoly.
It's the monopoly that's the problem. And it's interesting, you know, we talk about Bill Gates, and we shouldn't criticize him, and it's just jealousy and so on. But Bill Gates has a long history of being a bad boy, and he's been criticized all over the place. You may remember when Windows 95 was released, it was discovered that the software had a provision where if you went on the net through it, they could actually go into your hard drive and see what was in your, everything that was in your hard drive. And the rationale at the time was, they said, we're looking for pirated software. Pirated software is an immense problem. We want to be able to go into hard drives and make sure you've got a license for your Microsoft product in there. But inferentially, they also happen to be able to see all your personal files, like if you were a lawyer or whatever, they could see everything in there. And it was just chilling, the prospect that they could do this. And where's Windows 95? It's in 95% of the computers in the world, the government, all over the place. And so he shoots himself in the foot by doing things like that. And yet that's been his history all along. I'm trying to remember, there was a movie where the bad guy was a guy who owned a big computer company.
But how did that shoot himself in the foot? I know it stopped me from buying Windows 95, but it didn't stop a lot of other people.
I think a lot of people thought that was a sneaky, tricky thing for him to do. And if you're going to have $50 billion, if you're going to control 95% of the world's computers, you better be purer than the driven snow and give us no reason to think that you're going to do anything sneaky like that.
But he doesn't control them. He builds them. You control it. You know, like the last caller said, you know, he's in control of his desktop. No, he's not. I could have gone to Apple and got my desktop run on an Apple computer. I used to own an ST, which was another system called Gem, just as handy as Windows. But they were far more expensive. Mm-hmm. The control came in the fact that this guy was giving me a better platform at a cheaper price. That's where the control is. And if you want to control me with low prices, please do. That's how I want to be controlled.
Well, that's a trade-off. But again, the thing about Bill Gates is that he has this history of doing, you know, we've got into it, as was mentioned earlier, that they wanted to get into that market, the personal finance software market. So they're trying to build a competitive product. They can't build a competitive product. So they say, we'll just buy all our competitors out and then we'll control this market. Well, and then we'll charge whatever we want.
Why don't they just say then, Bill, we don't trust you and that's why we're going to do this? That's not what they're saying, though.
Well, they certainly have over the years, and that was the reason they couldn't buy into it.
Okay.
Let's said, forget it.
Let's go back to the phone. 643-1290, *1290 in the Cantel. You're always welcome to join our discussion here on Left, Right, and Center with Bob Metz and Jeff Schlemmer, and yours truly, Jim Chapman. And Gord's with us. Hi, Gord.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm kind of at a loss for definitions here. What is monopoly? As far as I know, there's tons of competitors for Microsoft.
That's true.
Well, what's
it depends
point?
What you're talking about, though. If you're talking about operating systems, they're...
You can buy an Apple.
Well, again, you can buy an Apple, which has, what, 2% of the market compared to 95%.
Yeah, but whose fault is that? Is that Bill Gates' fault?
It's just, no, but there are two concepts. One is, what is a monopoly? And a monopoly is when one organization dominates a market.
Dominates or forces?
You may say that they dominate it because they're more effective, cost-effective, whatever. But the fact is, they control the market. Nobody suggests they don't control the market.
Every number one company in whatever field they're in has a monopoly.
Or the Chicago Bulls, for example. They're obviously stifling competition because they're number one.
Well, again, and listen, I'm the one arguing the right-wing side today. Remember this. I'm the guy who's arguing that there's this problem that can come in free economic markets, where if you get one person who's got too much power, then you don't have that level playing field where everybody can bat it out and produce the lowest prices at the best,
the
best product
at
lower prices.
He's a slave at the whim of his customer, and that's why he has the wealth he has. He has a lot of wealth, and with his wealth, he has some power, but with you and me, he has none. He cannot force us to buy his computer. We will choose to do that of our own free will.
Well, today, but isn't the concern maybe 5 years from now he will be able to force us to buy his computer?
Well, how can he?
Well, maybe there won't be anybody left.
Well, if he has the law, I guess,
only the law can
do that.
No, but maybe there won't be anybody left who can compete with him.
Well, that's fallacious, because obviously you'd have to get rid of every person on the face of the earth
to get rid
of competition.
No, realistic competition has to do not just with the ability or the opportunity to buy another product. It's also to buy another product at a competitive price. Would you not agree?
Well, that's a contributing factor, but nobody's stopping it through law. That's what confuses me here, is that we seem to be applauding a monopoly called government, and we're on the other hand, we're saying Microsoft, who gets its money voluntarily, is bad.
But again, you know, it's funny because Microsoft exists because of a law. They exist because of a patent law. When they come out with a new product, they are allowed to keep all kinds of parts of it secret. If they didn't have that 17-year patent protection, they wouldn't exist because their product would be immediately pirated into Southeast Asia, and you'd buy knockoffs all over the place. They're the strongest ones who will go crazy if somebody has an unlicensed version of one of their products. They say, there's a law that says you have to buy this from us. We've got intellectual property rights to this thing. So they're all for the law, and they're all for regulation when it serves them.
But that's not a law. That's a different kind of law. It's a law that protects...
Wait a minute. A law is a law.
No, there's a law that violates your private property rights, and there's one that protects it. The one that protects it is the correct one. That's the one you just cited. The one that's the wrong one is the one that violates
but
it.
But I just thought I heard that it's unregulated. Everything should be unregulated. If there was no regulation,
the market
would
be
a better place.
Unregulated, not property rights and laws and things like that.
Okay, so some regulation is good. Some is bad.
Like, you don't have a right to regulate me to tell me I have to buy brand X instead of brand Y. That's what regulating the market would do.
But again, there are people who would argue it would be better not to have patent laws, that it should be the law of the jungle. If you can stay ahead of your competitor, more power to you. I hope you're smart enough to step ahead of those people
because I have a lot of misgivings about a lot of patent laws and copyright, because I think a lot of them are inappropriately applied, although I agree with them in principle. But beyond that, I don't think that's the issue here. I think Gore's question of what is a monopoly, it's basically in the mentality of most people dealing with this, it's the big guy. Big as monopoly. But that's not a monopoly is.
Well, I know, and fundamentally, as I say, we're driven back to this. Either you believe, and I'm not saying I believe or don't believe, but it comes back to this theory that either it's a good thing to have a bunch of companies roughly the same size duking it out, or it isn't. And it happens that in the United States, they've got this strong tradition of saying, we believe that's a good thing for our competition.
Well, they've been very successful.
You certainly don't believe that in issues like education
and healthcare. You think that it's more efficient to be done by one big monopoly called the government. And you've always talked about that as being efficient. And now here you are talking about big government.
I talk about a bunch of little governments attached to the people, but that's a whole other issue. But I'd say one thing you can't argue about the United States is that they've been successful. Their model has been this aggressive government policy of going after the biggest, like for 100 years, and yet it's the most vibrant economy in the world. They've been very successful at it, like it or dislike it.
Gore, a last word to you?
I think they're vibrant in spite of the government, not because of the government.
Right, thanks for the call today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. We're going to pause for a moment. Lots more to come on Left, Right, and Center with Jeff Schlemmer and Bob Metz. If you'd like to join us and get your 2 cents worth in, or even 3 cents worth, give us a call at 643-1290. I want to come back to my example about the automobiles again. I want to get away from Bill for a second because it may be a little confusing.
By the way, Jim, did you know that at one time in the past, Chrysler was taken to the antitrust legislation for including radios in its cars?
I didn't know that.
And I think that was 56, 57, and because that was bundling packages, too. People didn't want to always have to buy their car and then go out and get a radio separate. Mm-hmm. So they started bundling the radio in with the car, and sure enough, there was a antitrust
action. Didn't like
it. Yeah, that's
Radio
right. And that's your right wing for you.
Okay. I want to put that same example I put to our caller before. Chrysler comes up with new technology and designs a car that will get 200 miles to the gallon and still has great performance and so on and so on. And because of the patent laws, they are protected in that technology, and they decide that we don't want to sell it to anybody else. We're going to put these engines into Chrysler Corporation cars, and that's going to be the end of it. And they do that, and they sell a zillion of them, and General Motors is going down the toilet, and Toyota and everybody else, because they simply cannot compete. They're not even close to being able to compete.
That is going to happen, by the way, that Mercedes owns Ballard Fuel Systems, which makes hydrogen fuel cells, and that's what they're developing. That's going to happen.
So what happens? I'm going to ask each of you, in that situation, what should happen? Chrysler has the protection of the patent laws that have been applicable in this country for many, many years. Copyright laws, it's their intellectual property, they're making the most of it. Oh, and by the way, their cars are cheap too, because they're selling so many of them, the price has gone way down, which is one of the reasons why their competitors can't compete. I'm going to ask you, Jeff, in that situation, somebody comes to you and says, Jeff, we're going to give you the authority to fix or modify this situation if you choose to do so. What would you do?
Well, I guess the concern comes after everybody else is gone. And to me, what I would do is monitor how things are going. They've got, say, 17 years patent protection. If it looks like, GM or Nissan or Fiat or whoever are going to be gone, and it will just be Chrysler at the end of that 17 years, and if there's reason to believe that they're going to jack the price of the cars way up after that, then I might step in. But otherwise, I'd try and stay the hell out of the way.
Bob, what about you?
Well, I'd let the market prevail, and that means leaving individuals free to make their own choices and protecting the patent of Chrysler. Even if they did decide to put their prices up at some point because they thought they had this great monopoly on the market, which, by the way, would never happen because they would lose money in that prospect. But even if they did, they should be allowed to do so because that's the trigger to the market. That's the signal saying that there is value in putting, in creating another competitive base, mm-hmm. starting something new. If we legislate the price low, we end up really benefiting the big corporation because we're keeping them in business and keeping the other guys out because there is no incentive to get in. Those mm-hmm. prices were never meant to be manipulated by governments. They are an expression of the marketplace to us that carry very valuable information. And whenever we mess with the prices, we're getting false information. During the oil shortage of the 70s and stuff, Canada was still giving a false message because we were subsidizing our gas and oil to the consumers.
So people were buying big cars.
They weren't getting the right message from mm-hmm. the marketplace. Well, and that's why you have to let the market rule, because that's the only way you get the proper information. Every government intervention, every government law and restriction on trade and practice distorts the pricing system. And then we get wrong information and we make wrong decisions and we wonder, gee, why did that go wrong? You're talking about the issue, too, of sharing technology. Sony made a really big mistake. They invented Beta, and they also invented VHS, basically. But what they did, they gave JVC the rights to produce VHS, and JVC, in turn, signed that right over to many other companies. And mm-hmm. lo and behold, guess which one took over the market? Mm-hmm. Sony, kept Beta to itself and basically lost the market share because of that one choice mm-hmm. that they made. One so thing, it I shows guess... you should share your technology because you're going to benefit from that, too.
Yeah, that's the debate that Apple's always had about whether they should open their operating system or not, and historically they haven't, and it's been suggested that's prevented them from growing faster.
I agree with that entirely. I think that was their big mistake.
I think that where the fear comes is, and I don't know if it exists, but is there an industry or is there a product where one person can become so dominant that nobody else can catch up? And it's not computers, because I would have thought that IBM would run the world by now 15 years ago, and yet they just got clobbered because the little guys could come in and take over.
I don't think you can do that in anything other than a disposable product with a short shelf life, and there is no such short shelf life that I'm aware of a product that would allow you that kind of dominance. And here's why. If you go, for example, and come back to my Cuba, there's a lot of things in that country that are very interesting on a lot of different levels. Mm-hmm. You can't get automobiles. The average individual in Cuba can't buy an automobile, except for that the pool of pre-revolutionary cars, the American cars. So what you see in Cuba are cars that would have been retired here 20 years ago. You see cars with literally a million miles on them that are still running. Why are they running? Because there's a demand for them, and because it can't be satisfied at the purchasing end. You can't go and buy a new lot. You can't get one. You can't go and buy a new anything. It's simply not allowed. So the idea that the monopoly, because there's a monopoly there, the government has monopoly on cars. Well, what's happened to the individual? Well, if you want to buy one of these cars, you can still buy one, and the guy who owns it today has taken care of it because it has some value to him. So that, to me, that tells us a little bit about trying to totally control a market, saying, okay, we've got this monopoly now, so that means that, if you want to buy a car from me, you got to pay me $1 zillion. Well, no, in fact, I don't have to pay $1 zillion. I don't want one of your damn cars. I'll go over and buy one of these over here. Now, eventually, they become worth $1 zillion, too, but there's a differential there, and it kind of keeps it in balance.
Yeah, the cars actually reminds me of one of the examples that were raised in the competition law class of a problem with the monopoly, and that is that you may recall that it used to be the case if you bought a new car, you had to have all your service work done at that dealership, or mm-hmm. else there was no warranty. Mm-hmm. And the government decided, based on a bunch of complaints about that, saying there's no real reason to suspect that if you don't go to a Ford dealer, but you go to Joe's Garage down at the corner, that they're necessarily going to be worse, that the car is going to suffer mm-hmm. for that. So there's just no real... supportable reason for that. We think you just want to sell a lot more servicing than you otherwise would. So the government stepped in and said, you can't have that law anymore, or you can't have it that way. You can get your servicing done wherever you want, provided you maintain the same schedule as you're supposed to and all that stuff. But we're not going to force you to go to a Ford dealership to get your Ford fixed anymore. And that, I say, was a little example of a problem, they said, with sort of the large companies, that they could impose that on you.
It'd be interesting to know, though, whether, and I don't know whether you could ever be able to track this, whether the actual costs of warranty costs went up when that happened. I mean, were there more warranty claims because it wasn't being done?
I don't know.
And I see it as an issue of contract. If I buy a car and I contracted to buy that car, and that if I want, and as a condition of my guarantee for a year, two, or three, that I have to go to that dealer, I'm accepting that at the time of purchase. I don't see, still don't see where the government should step in on that. I mean, you talk about this class called competition law. Isn't that a contradiction in terms? I mean, to me, competition exists when you don't have laws in the way. And the law does one thing and protects private property rights. But, I thought that was an odd oxymoron.
My understanding is that this was all driven by business in the United States back in the 1800s. That it was the people who were buying these products, the people who were buying the steel, the people who were buying the oil, who complained about having to buy it at prices they thought were unreasonably high because Rockefeller or Carnegie owned it all. So I understand this whole thing was driven by business.
The prices were unreasonably low when they owned it all, and the prices went up after their trust was busted, so to speak.
But my understanding is it came from business. This whole thing came from business.
Oh, yeah. I'm not arguing about that.
But there are other examples of where government has done the same thing. If you look, for example, at Tucker Motor Cars after the Second World War, when Preston Tucker came up with this idea for this fabulous automobile and was attacked by various other automakers and dragged through courts and eventually exonerated, but far too late to do him any good. One of the great problems he had a plant set up, he had the equipment, he had the men, he had the car, he had the plans, and the United States government, which controlled the supplies of steel at that time because they were moving into the Korean War and had a monopoly control over the steel, wouldn't give him the steel because they were being pressured by other large corporations not to do so. This didn't come out too much later, but that's really what killed Preston Tucker. It wasn't the lawsuit, because he won the lawsuit. The government monopoly on steel supplies would not give him the steel because they didn't think it was in the best interest of the American economy to have this upstart building better cars than General Motors, which in fact he was building at the time.
Yeah.
So it's not just government that does it, or not just the industry that moves to monopoly. Government moves to monopoly too, even in industrial settings.
But what was in it for government in doing that? I suspect it was probably pressure from GM. And you remember the famous statement about what's good for GM is good for the United States.
There's no question. You've got General Motors in Detroit that employs a zillion people and by implication a zillion voters. They also contribute millions of dollars to political campaigns, and they say, listen, this guy's trouble.
So starting special interest groups, that's the problem.
643-1290, star 1290 on the Cantel. We want to hear from your special interest group this morning on Left, Right, and Center. Left, Right, and Center on Talk of the Town. Bob Metz, Jeff Schlemmer, and Jim Chapman here. Bob, let me ask you, do you think there is ever a situation where it would make sense for a government to intervene in a business? And I'm going to exempt areas of health inspection and that sort of thing. I'm assuming that you don't have a problem with that. Or am I making a mistake by assuming?
No,
that?
not where it would affect other people,
yeah.
Certainly. And certainly wherever business is actually operating illegally. You know, this is one of the things that bothers me. Look at what this guy, Chief Joel Klein, who is the federal antitrust chief in the United States, says about Microsoft. He says that they have this barrage of illegal, anti-competitive practices that Microsoft uses to destroy its rivals. I've never heard of these illegal Microsoft practices. They never name them, but they're always labeling them. And if there's something illegal in there, gee, I wish somebody would tell us what the heck it was. What did he do that was actually illegal? How did he actually break the law?
Well, it's the American antitrust laws. So say, if you try to corner a market,
okay,
that's illegal.
Oh,
it doesn't mean criminal law or anything like that.
So it's a judgment on the part of the regulators that this is illegal. In other words, you don't even know that you have broken the law until in someone's opinion, you have passed some kind of magical line. You know, there's no specific action that you can cross.
But that happens in everyday life, too. There are all sorts of laws that the boundaries of which are not hard and fast. They're somewhat arbitrary.
Well, but this is utterly arbitrary. Where is the line? There's no line at all.
They may know the line. I mean, we may not from that newspaper article, but the line may be very clear to people who are experts in this area of the law.
You know, they're saying that, okay, Bill Gates has 95% of the market. Is that the magic figure? Should it only be 90%? Is that, you know, when should they act? And having that market, again, we have to remember, we live in a free market. We're not in a market like the Soviet Union where the government might force us to buy Bill Gates products.
We have to remember, this is a big dance that's going on. Like this, say, Bill Gates is not going to get shut down or anything else. All that's happening here is this is a negotiation, and you've got a government agency that's
negotiating at the point of a gun. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
the
one, from both sides. And
no,
what happens
no, no,
is
no,
every
no,
so
no.
often, they're both...
The one guy's got his property,
walk away from the table, they call each other a bunch of names, yak, 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 yak.
and then they'll be back together. Next week could be reading the news that talks are on again, you know, the suit has been suspended, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is so choreographed, you can't believe it. And as I say, they will work out a deal at the end of the day, but
well,
part of getting to a deal is calling each other illegal and all that stuff.
It's certainly predictable given the players and the situation, but I wouldn't so much call it as choreographed. I've found in my readings of Bill Gates and reading, I've read interviews by him, I've read some, you know, because he's richest guys, I think you want to be interested in him, but he's, for years, he's been terribly naive about government, and he just sort of just carries on in his own little nerdy way, going on with his computer business, and he doesn't realize there's all these people out there who envy him, who want to do, you know, want to do him out of business,
coming
and
to get him,
and that they will go to government to have their bidding done. That to me is when you step over that line.
This is image management. He knows exactly what he's doing when he decides to do something like this. He's got the best legal help in the world advising him when they get into a strategy like this, and they sit back and say, here's the risks, here's what's probably going to happen, here's how it'll play out, here's our strategy. They've got this thing mapped out 10 steps down the road.
Okay, yeah, I wouldn't argue with you there.
Okay, we're mapping our way back to the telephones, and we have caller John with us. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing, Jim?
Fine, thanks.
That's good. It's a very interesting topic, that's for sure.
The only thing
I was thinking is that I think you have to change the consumer, that, don't you? Like, everybody nowadays, it's not so that they all want something, And like you say, you can always say, oh, no, I, you know, if you don't agree with what's going on, like you say, it's same with, like, computers. If you don't, like, we've got a Mac, and, I mean, you can't do anything without, if you don't have any Microsoft stuff. And, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're looking around,
yeah.
And it took us weeks to even find people that can help you on stuff. And another one I think of is, like, the NHL now, and same with, like, all sports. I mean, it's worth $90 to try and go see a hockey game. I mean, nobody can afford this anymore. But like you say, I mean, I guess the consumer has to say, no, we're not going to take...
Well, that's it, and I think that...
I've heard you say that before. You've given up on hockey.
The hockey analogy doesn't hold because you say nobody's willing to pay. That's not true. Lots of people are still willing to pay, and that's the problem.
Exactly, and the thing is, like you say, but now then you see what's going on with, like you say, the governments, and, you know, you get you have to give free taxes and stuff. Unfortunately, what happens is it drives people to the brink, doesn't like say... I mean, I think it's going to be so the demise of it, like I say, because, I mean, you just keep seeing these people asking for more and more and more. But like I say, I mean, you certainly don't want government intervention, but, oh, it's so hard to put the two together, isn't it?
Yeah, good point, John. Thanks for calling today.
What's that?
I said thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Take care now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And Doug's with us. Hi, Doug.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Metz, I normally tend to be on your side today, but you said a couple of things that have irritated me a little bit. It's not a straightforward issue. I understand that. Some years ago, in the United States, they were looking at General Motors and antitrust legislation as their market share crept towards 60%. And General Motors tried something. They put an oddly shaped radio and controls in a car and said it was standard. You didn't have to pay for it. And on the surface, the customer would say, great, they give me a free radio. That's a better product. For the same money, I'm getting a nice built-in AM/FM radio.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with it was that the radios were built by a division of General Motors called Delco Electronics. And it was not financially feasible for a competitor to retool and totally redesign how radios are made to fit that product. So in effect, in the name of helping the consumer, they eliminated the competition.
That's not what happened there, Doug, not by what the story you just told me.
Well, they were taken to court, and it was stopped. At that point in their development, those things started. With Microsoft, the same discussion started many years ago, but they have not been able to get it done in court as they did with General Motors. They didn't slow it down. And you said, what have they done illegally? They put software in Windows 95 that erased the files of versions of Netscape if you put them on their operating system. That was considered a predatory, illegal practice. This whole maneuver would not have gained any momentum at all if they had not been able to show that they didn't just compete. They took deliberate measures to eradicate the competition. And that's the difference. It's a deliberate, premeditated
Are you saying that they removed Netscape because of that reason, or because they had to remove files from Netscape so that their browser would run and not be interfering with files from another browser?
No, they ensured that Netscape would not run if Internet Explorer existed.
Okay,
and they didn't have to do that. They didn't have to do that. They could have left the customer the choice. Run Explorer if you like it, or run Communicator, a competitor's product.
Okay, now
put Shell gasoline in your car, or use GM gasoline. I mean, that's the difference. They weren't giving anyone an honest choice.
Now, Doug, I disagree with you. I already said earlier in this show, for example, I didn't take Windows 95 because I believed it to be a predatory program, so I stuck with Windows 3.1. I made that choice. I'm still running on 3.1. It serves me well for the time being. So, you know, it goes back to the previous caller, John, who says, yes, the responsibility is with the consumer. As to your example with the GM's antitrust, you said that they built an oddly shaped radio that they called standard. That, to me, is fraud. If you're building an odd-shaped radio and you're putting it on the market as standard radio when you know it isn't, that's fraud.
No, you misunderstand my example.
They called it standard
equipment. You didn't have to buy it. It was free.
Well, they didn't mean standard in the marketplace. They meant
standard with their car.
We were talking about Chrysler. You said Chrysler earlier did that. Was this the same story?
The same kind of thing, yeah. Probably. So if that's what they meant, well, I don't see a problem with it. If it bothers you, you don't buy the car.
Well, in the American system, they're the biggest believers of competition there is. At a certain point, and that's what we're debating and discussing, at a certain point, you become so large that you stifle competition, and they like lots of healthy competition.
Doug,
I think we would do well to watch their example.
I have to leave it. I got other people waiting, but thank you for your call, sir. Appreciate
Bye.
It. And we want to get Tom on, too. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how you doing, Jim?
Fine, thanks.
Good. Let me first say that normally I would take the standpoint that it should be a free and open market, and that the better product, the better competitor will prevail. But I guess the point that I think is being missed, but I guess was hit by the previous caller there, is that where the problem, as I see, where the problem is, what the complaint is that the bundling of one type of software into the operating system sort of prevents anyone else from developing versions of that software. I think there's a tremendous benefit.
That may be, Tom, but that's a consumer demand.
Computers run on Windows 95 or 3.1 or whatever, but if suddenly they started bundling Word for Windows and PowerPoint and everything into the operating system, then where's the incentive for anyone to develop a new word processing system or a new presentation program? There's not going to be a market for it. Now, you made the point that no one's forcing you to buy it. Well, that's not entirely true. If you already have a computer, no one's forcing you to buy it. But go out and buy a computer today, you're not going to be able to get a copy of Windows 3.1. It's going to come with 95 or very soon, or 97 or Windows 98. So I think that's where the key difference is in the fact that the choice is being removed, not necessarily from the existing consumer, but for someone who's going out to buy a computer right now. And yes, I think it's a marvelous idea, as I said, that most computers are going to run on Windows, because then I can interact with you and you can interact with your neighbor and so forth. But if there's software on there that has nothing to do with the operating system, then I think that is pushing the line as far as exploiting monopoly.
Well, I know that the industry is already very concerned that they've over-bundled, because a lot of people are turning off of programs because they're getting too many things that they don't need. But at the same time, all the bundling was done in response to consumer need. People would be getting computers, buying the basic operating systems. They want to go online, and lo and behold, they find out they don't have the program necessary.
Right.
So they get a browser, and then they find out, oh, you mean I need something else to dial in on top of the browser? So that's another program, and every step of the way is a frustration for the consumer. So all that I see that Bill Gates has tried to do is respond to that frustration so that when a person plugs his computer in, he turns it on and he can do what he wants without having to buy any more programs. And that was, I think, the basic market-driven reason for that type of bundling.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of Bill Gates. I think that he deserves every penny that he's earned and that he's provided a tremendous service.
But, Tom, you got to be careful when you start drawing lines about where his success should end or where we should be able to step in on...
Nothing to do with Bill Gates' success. It has to do with if you have something that is going to exist in 95% of a product, in 95% of the homes out there, you've got a product that's going to be there.
Well, let me ask
you. And then you use that entry point as saying, well, then we'll also put this in. Then I think you run the risk of limiting competition, and nothing improves without competition.
Okay, Tom, I have to limit your call here, but I thank you for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
And the music means we've run out of time, guys. Thank you. A lively
thank
one
you.
Today.
Good topic.
And we may revisit this at some point in the future.
No doubt.